Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Healing the Parent Wound. I'm your host, Tracy Principe, and today it's just me, and I want to talk about something that one of my listeners brought up that I thought was a great topic, and that's money trauma. So this is a really exciting topic, and it's really, really complex and nuanced, so I'm going to run through some of the basic core principles of what that means, what is money trauma and how that shows up in our lives and what that can look like. So, because it's really, it's really complex, and I had this myself and didn't really, realize a lot of things about, my relationship with money. So, let's talk about what that can look like in your life. And so basically money, when you think about that, financial trauma or money trauma often originates in childhood. So if you think about observing how your parents interacted with money, and what was the conversations in your home around money, what was happening, or what, was there conversations around money, or was there, what was happening specifically around money, and what traumas your parents might have experienced? Was there, poverty or financial hardships, the obvious ones, poverty, financial hardships? Was there money, and then something happened, like a divorce or a death or a job loss or some other trauma that affected you in that home, right? And what was, were your parents worried? Was there fighting? Was there anxiety? Was there depression? Was there frivolous spending? Was there addictions, shopping addiction, gambling, process addiction, something like that? Was there fear about spending? Was there a lot of fears? Did someone say, oh, no, we can't buy that because we can't afford it? Or, was there just a lot of stress around money? And did money cause distress in your household, right? Because again, that nervous system dysregulation is going to show up. And if that was a common theme throughout your childhood, or something changed and shifted that because of change in the household dynamic, that's going to show up, right? So, parents got divorced, and all of a sudden your mom now is a single mom, and she has to get to 3 jobs and support 4 kids, or, things like that. So, those obvious physical changes and emotional changes around money all ties into, what beliefs you picked up about money, right? Or did your parents have beliefs around rich people, that rich people were greedy or, filthy rich or, whatever? Those kinds of things. What kind of messages did you get? And then ultimately, really what it comes down to is money is about survival, right? So money is tied to our survival because we live in a capitalistic society. We need money to survive in most places in the world. And, that creates a lot of survival energy and dysregulation if we struggle to meet our basic needs. And then, of course, the more micro traumas of marginalized societies and people that maybe grew up in systemic poverty, right? And grew up on welfare and food stamps in systemic areas where that is generational. So, or, depending where you grew up in the world, what kinds of cultural and systemic traumas would have played a role in that also, right? So all of that needs to be taken into consideration. And then so those are the more obvious, traumas around money. The other ones would be, a little less obvious, more invisible, and that is going to be the emotional neglect side of childhood trauma, where, and I see this a lot, and this was me also, but I see this with most clients. It's more of the emotional, the neglect. So that's going to be, nobody, you know, there was no support. You knew that you had to fend for yourself, and there was no support, emotional support, financial support, no support. And those of us that just somehow we knew that there wasn't anybody available for us, and we had to survive on our own. And that is deep, deeply rooted in attachment trauma. Of knowing, you know, that emotional neglect that is rather invisible, but somehow we just know, we just somehow intuitively knew that nobody was available. It's because that happened before we had language, before we had, you know, it happened pre-verbal. So that really throws our little nervous systems into survival. And those of us that just knew that we had to fend for ourselves and maybe go out into the world, and we knew that there was no support, and we just kind of automatically, you know, started doing, fending for ourselves, getting a job, putting ourselves through school, relying on no one, being those really independent people, because we had to, right? And it's kind of unconscious for a long time. That can kind of go unconscious because it just seems like that's the way we are. And other people might even, you know, praise us for being really strong and independent. And we kind of like that, that somebody's giving us praise. And so we kind of run with that story, and that becomes the narrative. But in reality, it's really driven by survival and not having anyone to support us. And then I see that show up in relationships, where clients can be in a relationship and they have a supportive partner, but they're not even allowing themselves to feel that. And they're actually in their relationship running on that survival, independent, do it all myself, don't rely on anyone, even when they have a partner and are in a reasonably supportive relationship. They won't allow themselves to even feel what that feels like. It's too scary. So that can be another way that it really, really deeply shows up. So, and what that can look like is never asking anyone for help, whether it's financial help or just any kind of help, right? It really runs into other areas, not just financial. And that could just be, you know, just, it could just feel terrifying to ask somebody for $50 or, hey, can you loan me $20? I'll pay you back next week. Or, you know, $500, that would just be terrifying, right? So again, we just tend to make sure that we never have to be in a position to even think about doing that. And that was definitely me, because that's just too terrifying to ask someone for help. And certainly our family would not be of any support. They wouldn't, they're, you know, monetarily, emotionally, physically, those more neglectful parents. So that really throws us into survival. And we might be those people that, again, make sure that we have a good paying job and don't have to ever rely on anybody financially. So we're going to, you know, we might be those overachievers to make sure that we have a job that is good and steady and pays well. So we're not in that position to rely on somebody else, because that's terrifying. It's terrifying. However, what happens is we, you know, we abandon any support, from others, and we don't allow ourselves to feel that or feel what that feels like to have that support. You know, unless, again, we get into therapy and do some of the more somatic body based felt sense of safety to begin to let that in. And it's a process that I deal with, you know, when I work with clients, it's really a process to relax and allow that in. It takes a while. So some of the other things I see in this financial trauma also is the more enmeshed parents that really kind of might have supported you financially, but there was strings attached. There was a carrot dangling on a stick. So that's, you know, hey, I'm going to pay your school and your car and your phone and your rent or whatever. But there's going to be a lot of strings usually with the emotionally immature parents. There's going to be a lot of strings attached to that because the parents are getting something out of it for their own esteem, right? So they're getting something out of it. And when I see clients like that, they usually, you know, they're pretty exhausted because the parents are going to want, they're just very enmeshed and involved. And so that money comes with strings attached. And what happens for clients is they are in a relationship that is based on this financial give and take, this transaction, right? It's very transactional and it's exhausting. They're exhausted and they wish they could cut ties, but they can't because of this financial thing. And that's, you know, this financial burden, right? And that's a really, really tough place to be. And again, it's a lot of working through different things because, you know, that financial support, maybe they need it for college or whatever it is. So, you know, we're not necessarily, you know, dropping that because again, those types of parents, because it's so transactional, you can't set a boundary and say, hey, yeah, you know, I'm not going to do this or that. They will cut you off financially, right? And they're using money to manipulate you. And that's really, really tough. And it's really takes a toll. So, if money was used, you know, and I see this in parents that have means. So, I see that a lot with the parents that have the means, they will use money as a manipulation tool to manipulate their children, adult children. And that's comes with a lot of consequences. Obviously, it's not healthy. And so that's a lot to work through as well. Yeah. And so though, you know, that's another situation I see a lot. Another thing that can show up is on the flip side of the overachiever, there's more of the kind of learned helplessness and just the struggle. And although I did a lot of achieving, it came from a survival place, so it always felt like a struggle. It was not easy. Everything always felt like a struggle, and I always felt that other people had it easier than I did, and I didn't know why exactly. It just looked on the outside like other people had it easier, and I always had to struggle, and so that is a sign of trauma as well, is, you know, the struggle to make it, right? And that can come, again, from low self-esteem. Again, money is tied to low self-esteem. The codependency and people-pleasing ties into financial and money as well. You can actually be a people-pleaser or fawner with money. So we hear about people pleasing and fawning, but you could do that with money too, right? And I've seen this where the more of on the codependency and the people pleasing side of money trauma is that person that is always there to help friends. And I see this where someone will open up their home to friends that need a place to stay. And the next thing you know, there's not really a boundary or there wasn't really a contract. And this is where people get financially taken advantage of, right? So, you know, that overhelper, the overgiver kind of person that might allow a bunch of people in the home. Hey, yeah, you know, you can rent out this room. Just pay me $500 and half the utility, whatever it is. It's kind of like a verbal thing. Nothing really was documented. And the next thing you know, that person moves in and they're not paying rent and, you know, that kind of thing. Or maybe you're the person that, you know, you move into a friend's place and something happens. So I see that a lot with more of the people pleasers, the people that really don't have any boundaries, and they fawn with money. And that can go either way, right? But at the core of that is they get taken advantage of, or they allow, you know, they lend somebody money, they don't get paid back, they're a victim to scams, or some other, you know, person that promises them, you know, some kind of monetary gain that is too good to be true. So those kinds of scenarios I've seen people really lose a lot of money on, and they weren't in a place to be losing thousands of dollars, right? So it really takes a toll and causes more financial trauma, right? And I've seen people become homeless because of that. And it could even be with a partner, you know, people get into a relationship. I've seen that a lot. It has nothing to do with being a strong woman or a smart woman or a strong man or a smart man. People get taken advantage of and scammed in relationships financially. And I've seen that happen a lot. And I've seen people become homeless because of that. So, and that's a trauma on top of a trauma. They probably already have childhood trauma. And then, you know, we can have those traumas, significant traumas as well, that strengthen those grooves of I'm not good enough, and now this has happened, and it creates a lot of shame. And people have come to me and said, yeah, I've never told anybody, but this and this and that happened, and they feel very, very shameful about it. And they also feel like they're the ones to blame, you know, they blame themselves for these things. It's, you know, very, very traumatic. So another one I see, and this was me, is that I was a very impulsive, and I liked to do, things that were risky. Because I wanted money fast, I wanted that fast money, I put my money into very, very risky things. And of course, that did not always pay off. And I lost a lot of money doing risky things that I had no business doing because I had no education financially about day trading or stocks or risky real estate deals that other people were doing, but they had they were experts in that field and I wasn't, right? So that really hurt me. But I was trying to be like, I was trying to belong and be like other people. And I had no business in those arenas where I didn't have the experience to be doing those things. So that can happen as well. So all of those things can really, really be very, very traumatic and give us a lot of different messages, internal and external, about money, right? And also the other thing, and trauma, again, takes away our self-worth and our self-esteem, right? And so oftentimes we will look externally for, you know, those things to make us feel better. And again, for me, when I was much, much younger, it was very important for me to have money and material things because I thought that meant that I'm okay. If I have these things, I'm okay. But in reality, you know, I'm going to fill this hole, this void within me with material things, and that's going to make me feel better. But that's not sustainable. It's temporary. Those things can go away, right? And ultimately, it doesn't fill that hole, because that hole needs to be filled internally, right? And nothing really in the end, I was just working harder and harder for more things, and I got burned out, and I got in this vicious cycle of nothing was ever enough. That hole was so big and so deep that nothing I did filled any of that pain, right? And so that can happen too. So yeah, so really thinking about those experiences that you've had that started in your childhood around money. And then, you know, and why it never feels like enough, right? So, and are we always achieving? We're trying to make more money and it never feels like enough. Are you always constantly stuck in a financial rut, no matter how hard you try to move forward out of that? You know, another thing I see too, and this again goes back to the trauma, is a lot of people are just terrified to ask for a raise. So they might be doing a job and they're doing kind of this job that they've been doing for a really long time, but they're just terrified to speak up or ask for a raise or have a conversation with their boss or manager. And again, that goes back to that trauma of confrontation, right? Feeling like this is confrontation or somebody's, you know, and often what I hear from clients is that they think they're going to be fired for having a conversation. And that's that survival, right? I need a job and I just better just do my job and stay quiet and stay invisible and just kind of, you know, do my job and not take up space, not be big, not be, you know, because I might get fired. And I hear that like literally 99% of the time from clients, that if I ask for something or speak up or say something or set a boundary at work, I'm going to be fired. I'm going to get in trouble. And that usually isn't true. So that's a, you know, that's really kind of a cognitive distortion when we do that. And if it were to be true, that is probably not a company that or a job or people that you want to work with, right? That would do that. So a lot of times I, you know, when I help clients build resiliency and build capacity for going in and asking their boss for a raise, they will do that and get the raise, or there's a reason they're not, you know, they don't get the raise, and they will often finally get the courage to look for another job. And so another survival pattern is, well, I'm not going to look for another job because even though I'm in this job, I know it, it's safe. I have been in this job a long time and it's comfortable, and looking for another job and changing companies is just terrifying, right? That's too scary. So all of that is, again, it goes back to that trauma, the low self-esteem, the lack of resiliency that is going to show up in these different ways, right? And then another one is really, you know, struggling to keep up with bills or just being really anxious about your finances, right? Avoidance, avoiding paying bills until the last minute, letting them stack up, avoiding looking at your bank balance. A lot, this used to be me too. A lot of people do this. You know, just getting anxiety. So even thinking about how that feels in your body when you go to look at your bank balance, do you dissociate? Do you shut down? You just don't do it at all? Do you have so much anxiety that you're just like, oh my gosh, I'm in a panic. I can't breathe, right? Do you avoid paying your bills and then somehow you get the energy at the very last minute to pay your bills? You know, do you let things kind of, you know, do you get late fees from your bank or overdraft fees, those kinds of things, right? So, so all of these things, you know, just thinking about what I'm talking about, notice how that feels in your body, right? Do you notice some tension? Do you notice some dissociation? You know, the fight, flight, freeze. Where do you feel that in your body when you think about money? You know, do you feel a tightness in your chest? Do you breathe? You know, are you breathing shallow? What's happening in your body that lets you know that there's, you know, that there's something there that needs to be tended to? So, and in general, money is stressful, right? Money's stressful. That's kind of just again, goes back to survival. Our survival is directly tied to money in this capitalistic world that we live in. So thinking about what about money makes you feel unsafe? And is there anywhere in your body that you could feel a little safety around money? Is that possible or not? And if not, that's okay. Just take notice of that. So we can also kind of self-sabotage, again, procrastination, putting off tasks that could lead to more financial abundance, like looking for that new job or position, again, asking for a raise, asking for a new position, fear of failure, right? I'm not going to take any risk because I'm afraid, right? I'm not going to look for that new job because that's too scary. What if it doesn't work out? You know, what if I'm in a worse job than I am now? Those kinds of things, right? I'm not going to set boundaries with my parents. And again, it totally depends on the situation and the person. So another thing I see is women and men being dependent on their partner. It makes it hard. They've never had a job. They don't have an education. When it comes time to maybe leave that relationship, they don't have any tools to be able to do that. And that makes it really, really, really difficult. But that definitely directly goes back to childhood trauma. So really looking at that, right? Or, you know, clients will say, oh yeah, my partner was in charge of all the financial dealings. And sometimes there can be financial abuse in that. And that can be very subtle. Sometimes it's obvious, like getting an allowance. If you're in a relationship where you get, you know, you don't work and you get an allowance. But again, the minute that you say, hey, I'm going to get a job, or I want my own independence, or, you know, freedom, the other partner gets angry, and, you know, controls your ability to have some independence, right? And that is definitely a sign of abuse in relationships. So I see that a lot. And often clients will tell me, oh, I didn't see the financial abuse at first because it was really subtle, or I thought I was being taken care of, or, you know, something like that. But then later on, when they decide, hey, I want some independence of my own, or I want something to do, or, you know, some sense of self, that partner is not going to support you in that. So that's always a red flag. So and that low self-esteem can really have where you really doubt yourself and your abilities or your talents, or you don't even know what you want to do or what your passions are or what you could possibly make money at. So that unworthiness wound can be really deep. And then even the perfectionism, you know, needing everything to be perfect, which can really, really, stifle a lot of things. And it's absolutely the fastest way to burnout is perfectionism, honestly. And that was true for me too. When I moved from corporate to being an entrepreneur, which was years ago and different businesses, I realized that, you know, my stuff went with me wherever, you know, I thought it was the corporate that I got out of that. I was exhausted, and that did relieve some of the things, but then it was like a new set of things came up being an entrepreneur, right? And if you're an entrepreneur, if you've gone from corporate to an entrepreneur, you know what I'm talking about. It's like a whole new set of insecurities popped up, and definitely around money. But I realized that burnout from, you know, the people pleasing and perfectionism followed me. It didn't matter if I was in corporate and or an entrepreneur, it showed up in different ways, but it was still there. So all of that's been a journey for sure. So and then again, those self-destructive behaviors, right? So the gambling, overspending, even, you know, drugs and alcohol in that, right? The party. you know, maybe paying for everybody's drink, or, you know, being that person that pays for everybody on vacation, next thing you know, and that goes back to being used, being taken advantage of by being that person that pays for everybody, right? And it could actually put a financial strain on you. So I did some of that as well in my younger days. And, you know, again, just to be liked, to belong. So all of those things can really go back to a combination. You know, it's not all your parents, but again, really thinking about what was going on with money in your childhood home. What are the messages that you got? The fear? Did you see your parents struggle? You know, did you, you know, what was it, were there big changes in those dynamics? Or again, that invisible trauma, the neglect of somehow just knowing that there was nobody there, that you had to survive and go out into the world at a young age, or maybe you were parentified and you had to take care of younger siblings. And while your parents worked, again, if you had a single mom or something like that, and you had to stay home and take care of younger children, younger siblings, that you had to become that responsible one, it's probably going to be difficult for you to ask for help, to even rely on somebody or express your needs. It will probably be difficult for you to even ask somebody for monetary help. In fact, you might be the person that never lets anybody know that you're actually struggling monetarily or otherwise, right? And you had to do it all yourself, right? Or maybe you had to go and figure out, and this was me too. I didn't know anything about anything financial. Nobody taught me a damn thing. So didn't know about credit cards or applying for loans or getting a credit card or writing a check, opening a bank account, you know, just like basic life skills. I was just thrust into it and had to figure it out. So maybe you're that figure outer person that does all that, takes care of all the finances, you know, had to figure out, had to put yourself through college, had to navigate all of that on your own. And think about that. There was like nobody there to help you with any of that. That's really, really, you know, strong survival instincts. And you're probably doing that in your life now. So, yeah, so again, and think about your own relationship with money and how that reflects your self-worth. So think about that, your own relationship with money and how that affects your self-worth, right? So, the, you know, low self-esteem is either going to show up, just because you make a lot of money doesn't mean you have high self-esteem, right? It can actually be, again, that overachieving and perfectionism that allows you to have that good job, but on the inside, you're a mess. That was me. I was a total mess. But I made some decent money, and I pretended that I made, you know, it was all about outside, but I was falling apart on the inside. So that's really common, as well as just that low self-esteem of having more menial jobs, you know. Maybe you have that, you know, low wage job and you've never made over a certain amount of money, right? So that is also tied to that self-worth and trauma. And maybe you're just exhausted. And probably a people pleaser, maybe some codependency, and then just really a lack of boundaries, because you're not going to have boundaries and you're going to be that overworked person that maybe works retail or restaurant or, you know, bartending or something like that. Those jobs tend to be overworked and underpaid, where you're gonna, you know, the boundaries are really blurred, right? And in those jobs, because there's a bunch of other people that also don't have boundaries and they don't set boundaries, it is, in my experience and what I see from clients, it's harder to set boundaries in those industries than other industries, but it can totally be done because there are in most U.S. and you know, speaking as someone who lives in the United States and who's white, there's protections for us, right? So there are things that we can do, and I help clients kind of navigate that and get, you know, build up this esteem to do some of these things that we can do and have the right to do, and have protections. So, yeah. So really thinking about, you know, really what it comes down to is your self-worth does not equate to your net worth, right? Even though, unfortunately, in society, we see that people that have money are put on a pedestal. Oh, they're such great people and yada, yada, yada. They're the pillar of the community, and maybe they donate and, you know, do a lot of things, you know, for the community. So they have a high net worth means that they're more valuable than other people, which is a sick and twisted thing in society because, you know, a lot of you I work with and talk to that tell me, oh yeah, my parents, you know, they had money and they do this and that and everybody loved them, but behind closed doors, you know, so-and-so was a pedophile or an abuser and nobody knows about that. And how many leaders and, you know, CEOs and people, politicians and whatever, do we see that that's true, that, you know, they're probably not a good person, even though they have money. So, and, you know, that's really, you know, unfortunately, that is the way society works. And I don't think anybody is deserving of a pedestal just because they have money, because I don't know them, right? I don't know who they are behind closed doors. So, yeah, so all of that, you know, I know this is a lot. It's a lot, and there's more. I'm trying to think, like, what else? Some people hoard money, right? So some people are those penny pinchers, and they have a lot of money, and they hoard money, but they live, they just have this scarcity that they believe that there's not enough. So they probably have money, but they just can't part with it. And that is some deep trauma. They might have had a big loss, or their parents had a big loss. So they're going to compensate by hoarding money. And just, you know, we might call them a penny pincher, or a cheapskate, you know, or something like that. But they are just terrified to spend money. And maybe they can also be somebody that's like working well into their 70s, even though they have a lot of money. They just really think that there's not enough. And that is deep survival. I see that in clients. Some kind of big, big event happened to them, or they most likely grew up in extreme poverty. That's a big one that I see. They grew up in extreme poverty. So that can actually make them hoard money. So yeah. And again, those people that are generous to a fault, where they, and I've seen that also, where somebody has a lot of money and they feel good giving it away and helping friends. But they all of a sudden they have all these people around them that are looking for handouts and riding those coattails. I've seen that. And so I've helped clients implement some boundaries around that. And it's really, really, really hard for them to do. So, yeah. And then again, those beliefs around money is bad, money is evil. If you got any of those beliefs from your parents, maybe you feel bad about having more money. Here's one. If you feel bad about having more money than your parents, you feel guilty for having more money than your parents. I actually have worked with clients that felt guilty about having more money than their parents. And so, you know, that could have been because your parents thought that money makes you a bad person or greedy, or, you know, something like that. That rich people are greedy or unethical, right? So, yes. Yeah, so a lot of different things can go into money trauma. Your home, your childhood, start with that. What was going on with money? And then in society as a whole, right? Larger, you know, what are the beliefs that you got from your friends or in society, in your culture, in your society, in your town, where you live, right? About that, right? So I grew up in a pretty wealthy area in I grew up in California. So, you know, I grew up in a wealthy, in the Bay Area. I wasn't wealthy, but other kids were. So I saw other kids, you know, they lived in mansions. They drove like their parents' old BMW or Mercedes or whatever in high school, you know. When I really started noticing it was in high school. And I saw that kids had things that I didn't have, and that made me feel bad. It just made me feel bad. I don't really remember anybody saying anything about it, but I just know that, I felt bad, and because I didn't have anybody telling me anything at home about that, I just formed my own opinion, and I said, oh, this is uncomfortable. I don't like the way I feel. And I'm going to make sure that I don't feel this way. So I really went off and tried to change that by feeling a different way and fitting in, with these people and in society to make myself feel better. But as we know, that is not sustainable and it's temporary. And that hole, that void that we're feeling, low self-esteem and low self-worth, just gets bigger. And there's nothing external that can fix that, right? At least in my experience. So, so I think that's what I want to say about that today. But I think this is a really, I just love this topic. It's, again, really complex and nuanced. And these are the things that I can think of. So I'd love to hear your feedback on this podcast. I know it's kind of a different topic, but it's very valid. And I'd love to hear what you think about this, or if I missed anything important or anything that really stands out for you. I could do a part two if needed. Let me know what you think about this. And I'm going to try to do these podcasts weekly if I can get some guests going. So stay tuned. I hope you like this episode. I'd really love to hear your feedback. And again, I still have the Facebook group open. It's called Healing the Parent Wound Podcast Community. So come join us in there. And all right. See you guys soon.